Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Ancient evil. Whenever one finds themselves to be a stranger in a strange land, there are bound to be clashes with what they know and the reality of this new foreign realm. Yet in addition to culture shock and a deluge of new customs and tradition, there's also often a collision against the more paranormal aspects of this new place. And according to some reports, this is not only an encounter with strange magical beliefs, but with the actual paranormal entities beyond one's own culture, understanding, or experience. One place where this seems to have happened is in the Middle East, where soldiers far from home, fighting in an alien environment and culture, have allegedly on occasion come face to face with actual manifestations of one of the most ancient and persistent supernatural beings of Middle Eastern lore, creating strange and baffling encounters between the modern Western world and the unique supernatural denizens of the East. There are few entities in the Muslim world that are as entrenched within the lore and consciousness of the populace as a mysterious jinn, also sometimes spelled D-J-I-N-N, which means to hide or hidden. These entities are described by the Quran as being formed by Allah of scorching wind and smokeless fire, whereas the angels were formed of light and mankind of clay. In the wake of their creation, the jinn were punished after being caught eavesdropping on the angels, or banished to earth, where they are said to inhabit an invisible parallel realm to our own. Many kinds of jinn are said to exist, including shapeshifters, winged entities appearing as smoke called the Ifrit, seagoing jinn called the Marid, and the graveyard-dwelling ravenous and man-eating ghoul, among others, with a wide variety of powers ranging from shapeshifting, invisibility, fortune-telling, telepathy, flight, and teleportation, all the way up to the wish-granting powers often associated with the Western version of the genie. Although Middle Eastern lore, these wishes are typically only granted by the most powerful jinn with either a great amount of flattery or more violent methods such as winning a battle or imprisonment by using a special vessel equipped with a magical precious stones, runes, or through harnessing their powers with specialized rituals. Black magicians are said to utilize the power of the jinn through rituals that typically require them to perform blasphemous acts on the Quran, such as urinating on it or wearing a copy on each foot in a restroom, or engaging in other impure acts to gain their favor. The appearance of jinn can also fluctuate wildly, with some appearing as beastly, monstrous, or demonic entities, while others appear as more or less human, often female, but not always. While there are both good and bad jinn, for the most part, the jinn are said to be generally mischievous, engaging in all sorts of troublesome or even downright evil behavior. One favorite trick is said to be to take the form of whatever is most likely to distract someone in order to lead them astray. They are also known to lie, deceive, or manipulate humans, and to even possess them on occasion. Indeed, many cases of what those in the West would call demonic possession are more often than not blamed on the jinn in the Muslim world. Jinn can also hold the power of suggestion over human beings, causing them to do bad deeds or even driving them mad or to suicide, with it sometimes claimed that suicide bombers had jinn whispering into their ears. In fact, it is said that every person has a genie that follows them around at all times, with the main purpose of trying to lead us astray or corrupt us, and becoming free to roam the earth when the person they are bound to dies. Even the lucky few who are granted wishes by these entities are warned to be very careful with the wording of their wishes, as the jinn takes great satisfaction and pleasure in interpreting these wishes extremely literally, or warping them in such a way that the end result is not what the person wanted at all. While this may all sound like pure religious legend and folklore, many Muslims, especially the less educated or those from rural areas, strongly believe that the jinn are real Indeed, all manner of paranormal phenomena, such as ghosts, fairies, demons, alien encounters, and even strange creatures or cryptids such as the Yeti, are often attributed to being the jinn in disguise. Sightings and encounters with them are common, and there are unfortunately many cases of actual murders, executions, or lynchings instigated because of this belief in their existence, not unlike the witch hunts of old. One such incident happened in the Kikandwa district of central Uganda, where the Muslim populace became convinced that a genie was going around terrorizing people and raping women. One day, a disheveled woman emerged from the wilderness and was immediately attacked by locals who thought that she was the genie in disguise. She was beaten to within an inch of her life, and even the police joined in the assault, shooting her dead. The woman turned out to be a distraught villager who had been desperately searching for her missing husband. But to those who had killed her, she was a genie. There's also the previously mentioned use of black magic, using the power of jinn, which is highly illegal by Muslim law and will bring swift execution, usually without any sort of trial. In fact, there's a shocking number of people executed for the crime of consorting with the jinn every year right up to the present. While considering the deep cultural connections to the jinn in Muslim countries, it might be tempting to take this as all mere superstition. But Westerners have also had rather spooky alleged encounters with what appear to be jinn as well. And a good source of such tales is the military presence in the Middle East. It seems that there are numerous military personnel who claim to have had rather bizarre encounters with what seem to have been perhaps actual jinn, which have appeared to the witnesses to be far more than mere folklore and legend. One such report comes from June of 2003, from a soldier who had been stationed in Mosul, Iraq, with the United States Army in the infantry with the 101st Airborne. According to the witness, at the time of the incident, he had just been involved in helping to suppress a riot that had broken out with locals unhappy with the corrupt local police. In order to protect the police, squads were deployed to various police stations 24/7 for their protection, and the witness happened to be in one of these squads one evening, keeping watch on a three-story police building located in a cramped section of town, zigzagged by narrow roads barely wide enough to drive through. The witness described what happened on his watch thus. Myself and two other guys from my squad were sitting on the balcony of the second floor of the station, pulling security on our shift. It was sometime in the night. If I had to guess, I would say it was sometime around 02:30 hours. While on guard, we would use the lights on our rifles to illuminate any car that drove by so we could see if there were any sort of weapons in the vehicle and stuff like that. We heard a car driving toward us from one of the side roads on the mosque, so we got ready with our lights to illuminate the car when it came into view. Once we saw the car, we shined our lights onto the vehicle, directing the light toward the driver. The driver had a typical reaction to the surefire light, which is blindingly intense, by squinting his eyes and attempting to look away from the light. The passenger had a much different reaction. His eyes seemed to glow with intensity by the light. He stared right back at the light, almost looking through it and at us. It was very eerie. At the same time, the best we could describe were that his eyes were that of a cat in the dark, with a flashlight shined in its face. I have never heard of a person's eyes being able to reflect light like that before, or anything you could purchase to do such things, especially in a second or third world country. Another possible report dealing with jinn was relayed by a U.S. soldier deployed to a place called FOB Endurance in Iraq, which was more or less composed of just some simple tents and airplane hangars that had been taken over from Iraqi forces. One feature of the camp was a sturdy concrete bunker that was fully equipped with metal blast doors. At some point during the deployment, the witness started a relationship with a female soldier, and they chose the bunker to have their private meetings because it was secure, with only one way out or in. And there was also the fact that since the camp's noise generator was situated just outside, they could immediately hear if anyone opened the blast doors. However, the bunker trips would not last long after the two had a very strange encounter there. the witnesses explained. Here's what stopped the bunker trips. Well, about the second night on, Sarah would wake me in the middle of the night telling me she was hearing something inside the bunker with us. At first, I attributed the noise she was hearing to hedgehogs, as that part of Iraq is lousy with them. I shrugged it off until I heard a noise. There was no doubt. They were footsteps. The night before the last night we stayed down there, I awoke to whispering coming from the corner, which was followed by footsteps that approached my side of the bed. I woke Sarah and reluctantly turned my flashlight on, fearing what came next. But there was nothing. Nobody, no footprints, and worst of all, the blast doors was closed just like we left it. The last night started with Sarah warning whatever was down there that we were not in the mood to be messed with and that we just needed to sleep. We both fell asleep as we reassured the other we were just hearing things. Again that night, Sarah woke me and we sat there in total darkness, listening to whispers coming from the corner. Two different voices, followed by footsteps approaching our bed, and then our bed violently shook for just a couple of seconds, and then a tremendous sound, as if a metal plate had just been dropped next to the bed. In our panic, it took me a good 45 seconds to locate the flashlight. But once on, there again was nothing with us. No footprints, no evidence of what made the loud crashing sound. That was our last night in that bunker. Was this the work of djinn, ghosts, or just overactive imaginations? It is hard to say. In 2005, there was also a report of a soldier at FOB War Horse in Iraq. The weird account follows thus. We had a generator Connex converted into an Offex. I was inside the Connex doing my water testing, and I heard the sound of someone walking on the rocks outside the Connex. I figured that maybe it was security coming by to check on things. I went outside and there was no one there, and the sound stopped. The moon was bright that night, and there was light shining on the rocks from it. I saw shadows of what looked to be spiked crescent zipping past my feet. I looked up and there was nothing flying around. These things were zipping real fast. Later, I drove back to my LSA to get something. While I was backing up to park, someone started banging on the truck. I stopped immediately thinking that I had hit someone. I got out and looked. No one there. This was about 4 a.m. I went to the bag farm to take more samples and do a general check for water leaks. Between the last outermost bag and the HESCOs, there appeared a small light dancing around. I walked over to that area and it stopped. When the new reverse osmosis water purification unit site was completed, it was custom to get there before breakfast to start the generator, get the AC or heater working in the lab or office, and set out a clipboard at the distribution point before walking across the road to the DFAC for breakfast. As I left the office to go, I walked past the Ropu Connexes, and I saw a man in a white t-shirt sitting on his heels, leaned up against the Connex. I started to go that way to see who it was and what he needed, but when I looked away and back again, he was gone, nowhere in sight. And yet another possible encounter with a djinn, an ex-army security guard working in Karachi, Pakistan in 2005, also had quite the bizarre story to tell. He had been hired by some affluent families to guard a street in a more upscale district of the city, and one night something decidedly terrifying happened to him that neither he nor the families he worked for could explain, according to one member of one of the families that had hired the guard. Sometime past midnight, he was sitting in his chair when we were woken up by his screaming as he jumped over the gates of one house and entered in shock. Mind you that this was a man armed with a repeater, a weapon with 12 rounds, automatic pumping action, something similar to Arnold's weapon in Terminator 2 while riding his bike. Upon inquiring, he kept on repeating the same story for 1 hour. He said that in an empty area between two houses, he first saw a rabbit hopping right opposite to where he was seated. In an instant, the rabbit sort of transformed into a cat while moving towards him. As this was happening, he tried to dispel this event as an illusion. However, he was soon terribly shaken as the cat had now started taking the shape of a woman. He clearly described the transformation And at the point where he saw the half-woman entity, he got so scared that he started screaming, and his legs, which were jammed, were able to find the strength to jump into action over the 6-foot gate into our neighbor's house. As far as I remember, he left his gun outside, and we had to gather it later. Our neighborhood remained in a state of shock and fear for quite some time after this event. The guard had been with us for nearly a year, and after this, he was never the same guy again. Soon after, he swapped his duty roster with another guard. One retired remote viewer from the U.S. military named David Morehouse wrote of his own experience in his book, Psychic Warrior. According to Morehouse, he was stationed in Jordan at the desolate valley called Batin al-Ghul in order to take part in training exercises with Jordanian troops. The location is already spooky enough as it is, with the valley long said to be prowled by demons and ghosts, and even the name Batin al-Ghul itself having the sinister meaning of belly of the beast. Jordanian soldiers have often told of seeing demons stalking about in the wasteland or even attacking people. The whole valley was said to be a cursed place. But things would get strange for Morehouse when he sustained a head injury when he was accidentally shot in the helmet during a training exercise. Morehouse would go on to claim that the injury had left him with the ability to see the djinn, which he would report thus. Sometime in the night, my eyes opened to a surreal light outside the tent. It was like the light of an eclipsed sun and wasn't coming from any stove. It filled the night sky. The entire Batin al-Ghul and the hills beyond were bathed in the strange bluish-gray light. I walked to the edge of the bluff and stared into the valley. Dark figures moved effortlessly across its floor like apparitions. They poured from the rocks in various heaps and shapes and moved about the clusters of tents. I could hear muffled cries from the Jordanian encampment, and momentarily I thought we were being overrun by thieves or Israelis. Panicked, I turned to run for help. Colliding with one of the figures, I reflectively closed my eyes. Except I didn't collide. I walked right through it. Turning around, I watched the figure disappear over the edge of the bluff. Another report of possibly an encounter with djinn was described thus. I was in Kabul, Afghanistan on my 4th tour in the Middle East. At the time, I was a platoon sergeant of a PSD unit. That day, there was intel that insurgents were looking to target our vehicles on our normal routes. There was only so many different roads to get to NK, and it was hard to change up the pattern. So I decided to try a completely new route that we hadn't driven before. I scouted out using a map and satellite imagery. The road looked like it was paved and good, so we headed out. As we started down the new road, we saw it was dirt and not paved. We got stuck in mud right as this tall wall started. Later, I found out that the old British cemetery was on the other side. I got out of the vehicle and I was knee-deep in mud that was not from dirt, but human waste and trash. It took over an hour to extract from the mud. Worst part was I had to toss out my favorite pair of boots. Now, I would toss that up to bad luck and coincidence, but around the same time I was having some strange stuff going on. I had a room that I could lock and no one else could get into, and I would put something like vehicle keys or other important items on my bed and leave and lock my room, only to come back and they would be missing. I would start searching everywhere for the item and could not find it. I would leave again, and when I came back, they would be in the exact spot I originally left them. And this happened on several occasions. Later on, I was reading a couple of books on djinn, Legends of the Fire Spirits, and another one I can't remember the name. And my experiences lined right up with their modus operandi. They like playing pranks and taking things from people, and have a strong attraction and appear near human waste. Are the djinn real? Are they the actual entities that are described in Muslim lore or something else? Whatever the answers may be, these mysterious beings remain firmly entrenched within the cultures and traditions of these countries and are very real to many of those who live there. It seems very curious that if these are merely constructs of superstition and religious beliefs, that they should be seen by foreigners who do not share the history steeped in such myths. What is going on here? Whether the djinn are real or not, Such cases present a curious clash between East and West, and a bizarre peek into what happens when we confront the powerful paranormal beliefs and mores of faraway lands. Indeed, perhaps, when we come face to face with things beyond both our culture and our understanding. It followed me home. I'm talking about the first war with Iraq under H.W. Bush in 1990, just to be clear. I was stationed at a U.S. base in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Saddam threw his Scud missiles at us, but he was such a bad shot, they landed in the middle of nowhere. Fortunately for everyone, unfortunately for me. The middle of nowhere in Arabia is called the Empty Quarter. It is the vastest contiguous desert in the world. It is the size of Texas. Humans don't live there, but something else does. I was assigned to recover what the Scuds carried. My job was to find the Scud, identify the payload, and collect any remnants of that payload. You see, Saddam had all kinds of poison gas, and we knew from what he did to the Kurds that he wasn't afraid of using them. WMDs are no joke. So if the Scud doesn't explode and a missile full of mustard gas is sitting in the desert, it could find its way into a dirty bomb under New York. My job was to make sure that never happened. Finding the Scud wasn't easy. Radar and satellite only tracked it to a general location within the Empty Quarter. I drove with my team into the desert, to the last human settlement before the world turns into an endless waste. This was the patch of sand the Bedouins of the Almorah tribe call home. They live mostly as they had for millennia, in a cluster of sheepskin tents, aided only by their camels. In a 20th century twist, they all had AK-47s, and they greeted us by pointing those AKs in our faces. These tribesmen looked like they came out of a Bible story, dressed in simple cloaks with white turbans wrapped around their heads. Their sheikh was slightly fancier, a heavyset man of about 60. He wore the typical red and white Saudi headdress. His beard was dyed red, and he walked with a plain wooden cane. "Peace be upon you, O sheikh," I said in my best Arabic. I'm good with languages, and picked it up after taking a few classes and conversing with allied Arab soldiers. "We come with the peace and the blessings of God." So we unloaded the boxes of rice, bread, and canned supermarket goods that nomadic hunters don't get to eat. These were treats to them, and their trust would help us to get the Scud. We talked within the hospitality of the sheikh's tent. Floor cushions embroidered with red and black stripes stretched across the inside. He served us rich Arabic coffee that makes an Italian espresso taste like baby milk. "You are looking for the missile. We all saw it," the sheikh said. "Did it explode?" I asked. "It happened at night," the sheikh gulped his coffee. "The ground did not shake and the horizon did not light up with fire." "Can you tell us exactly where it fell?" "Yes, but you cannot go there." "We can go anywhere, even if it's in a mountain. We'll fly up with a chopper. You cannot go there because it is forbidden." The sheikh arose and walked out of the tent. I followed him to a well. A little Bedouin boys were playing tag around it. There was something odd about their faces, about their eyes. I only got a glance, but I swear they had no pupils. The sheikh told them to go home, and they ran off. "These are the lands of the Almorah," said the sheikh, "and have been for thousands of years. But those lands..." He stared down into the depths of the well. I peered down with him. The chasm seemed endless. "Well, whose lands are they?" I asked. "They belong to a different tribe." He tapped his cane against the ground. "A tribe of the jinn." The sheikh explained the details to me. God created man out of clay and the jinn out of smoke. The two creations live in separate dimensions here on this earth, but there are places where these dimensions cross. In the Empty Quarter, there is one such place, but that's not all. There are many tribes of jinn. Some are good, some are wicked. In the Empty Quarter lives such a wicked tribe of jinn that God forbade them from ever leaving. There is one loophole, though. Those jinn are imprisoned there, and they all want to leave, the sheikh said, but God has forbidden them from leaving. There is only one way they can get out, and that is from within a human body. I wish I'd listened to the old man, but I wasn't interested in cautionary tales for Bedouin children. I bribed one of the young men of the tribe with a 500 rial note worth about $130, and he told me what we needed to know. The operation went perfectly. I didn't notice anything strange about the patch of sand where the unexploded scud lay. We recovered the scud's 6-ton payload in a truck and were back in Riyadh by evening the next day. After that assignment, I was sent to Kuwait as part of the Liberation Force. Saddam rained scuds on us all day, but none of them hit. It was an easy win for good old Uncle Sam. And when the war was over, I came home like everyone else. Some came home in body bags, others with PTSD, and some came home just fine. I thought I was the latter, but I came home with a djinn that wants to kill me. The day I came home was the happiest in my life. My 6-year-old Daniel had grown up so much. He jumped into my arms while my wife Angela hugged us both. For now, Uncle Sam was done defending the world, so I could be with my family. The next day, we barbecued steaks in the backyard, and I bought my son a trampoline. "Don't jump too high, or an eagle will snatch you," I told him. Daniel laughed it off. He was already too old for such bullshit. Angela made us delicious lemonade, and later that night, we all lay in the grass and gazed at the stars. "That one is called Al-Ghul," I said, pointing at a bright star in the Perseus constellation. "It's Arabic for demon." I pretended like I was a demon, grabbed my son, and tickled him. I can't describe how good it felt to enjoy the mundane with my family. "You know Arabic, Daddy?" Daniel asked. At that age, sons are so impressed with their fathers. "I do. And if you ever meet an Arab, you should say to them, As-salamu alaykum." "As-salamu alaykum? What's that mean, Daddy?" "It means peace be upon you." But my peace was about to evaporate, like a glass of water under the scorching desert sun, because the next morning I saw the djinn. In fact, I see it every morning. I can only see it in the moments between sleep and wakefulness, when my body's paralyzed, a pitch-black creature as if covered in soot. It's so tall the ceiling forces it to bend its back at a right angle, so that its head is right over my bed. Its face looks strangely human, but its eyes have no pupils, like those little Bedouin boys playing around the well. It says to me in Arabic, "Today you will die, today you will die, today you will die." It repeats this incantation until I wake up, and when I do, I spend each day trying not to die. The djinn itself cannot kill me, it can only affect me. Sometimes when I'm driving, it will conjure this fog into my head and body that makes everything so heavy that I want nothing more than to sleep. I've been in 3 car crashes in the last 26 years and spent weeks in the hospital as a result, but I'm still alive. Last month, I was chopping vegetables with a kitchen knife, and it told me there was a treasure in my wrist, a magic whistle, and if I got it out and blew on it, Angela and Daniel would come back to life. When the EMTs found me passed out with my wrist mangled, of course they thought it was a suicide attempt. How typical for a veteran to try to kill himself. The month of therapy paid for with your tax dollars didn't cure me of the djinn. I've called every kind of exorcist, Islamic, Catholic, Jewish, hell, even Zoroastrian. They've performed every kind of exorcism. The djinn is not affected at all. I realize now what that old sheikh called djinn may be something else, because these creatures surely were not created by God. Truth be told, I don't even know if I believe in God, but I know I believe in the devil. Call me a stereotype, but I like guns. I had a Mosin Nagant, an old Russian World War II rifle that I kept locked in a gun cabinet. Target practice with the old beast was one of the few things that took the edge off of life. About a year after I returned from war, I was cleaning the bore of the gun in my kitchen while my wife and son bounced on the trampoline in the yard. The djinn told me to look in the sky. There was a scud coming, a rocket flying through the heavens. The whine of the scud pierced the air and boomed through my ears. I knew unless I shot it down, the explosion and payload of mustard gas would kill everyone in sight, my family included. I assembled and loaded my gun, rushed into the yard, and shot at the scud in the sky. That was the only time I'd heard the djinn laugh, like the broken notes of a piano. Daniel lay spread out on the trampoline with a bullet hole in his head from my Mosin Nagant. The sky was clear, and my wife's shriek replaced the booming of the scud. Angela hung herself 12 days later. I would have done the same, but I don't want to die. The court declared me insane, and I spent 24 years in a loony bin, where getting killed or killing yourself was as impossible as it gets. The djinn did not like that, but it was its fault. After all this time, I think I finally know how to get rid of it. No, I'm not going to kill myself. Despite all that's happened, I want to live. I realize now that the djinn wants me dead because it is literally stuck inside me, the same way it was stuck in the empty quarter. When it went inside me 27 years ago, it traded one prison for another. But if I die, then it's free to roam the world and maybe find someone else to torment. That's all it wants, so that's what I'll get of it. I'm going to go into cardiac arrest to stop my heart. But a few minutes before I do that, I'll call 911 so that the EMTs can arrive in time to revive me. That way the djinn will be able to escape the prison that is my life, and I'll come back from the dead. I might suffer some brain damage, but if I time it right, it will be minimal. I saw this on a show called House once. The main character sticks a knife in a socket to electrocute himself and stop his heart, so he can find out if there is an afterlife. But because he's in a hospital, he's revived after a few minutes. So here I go dialing 911. I can already hear the ambulance sirens, and I can see the djinn, its body at a right angle and its head twisted on its long neck. It's smiling at me with the whitest eyes. Now it's laughing its broken piano laugh, like the day when it made me kill my son, and I realize, what if this is a trick? What if this is how it kills me? There's no going back. I'm leaving this note here. So just in case I don't return, you all know my story. Maybe in those moments between life and death, I'll see Angela and Daniel, and they'll hug me like the day I came home from the war, because the truth is, I never came home. But maybe I can now, so here I go. Wish me luck, and peace be upon you all.